You're listening to Viewpoint Alabama, a public affairs program from the Alabama Radio Network about the people, places, and events that impact our state.
Hello, this is Viewpoint Alabama. My name is Dino, and just a moment, we're going to be talking to retired Major Jeff Hall and his wife, Mrs. Sherry Hall. Now, they are a military family, and just to give you a little backstory on the Halls, Major Jeff Hall served our country with two tours of duty in Iraq. He came home, found himself coping with post-traumatic stress disorder, thoughts of suicide, depression, and so his experiences in Iraq and after the deployment impacted his family life with his wife Sherry and their two daughters. And obviously that is a huge concern of servicemen and women coming back from duty is PTSD. And so Veterans Day, we just had it this week. And throughout the month of November, Military Family Appreciation Month, I just want to say a big thank you to the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net. They're asking Americans to honor the sacrifices of America's warriors and military families by encouraging all service members, veterans, and military families to seek care for psychological health concerns. And like I said, in a moment, we're going to talk to Major Jeff Hall, who's retired after 20 years of service, and his wife, Mrs. Sherry Hall. And if you'd like to know more about the Real Warriors campaign, just visit realwarriors.net. It's a multimedia public awareness campaign. It encourages help-seeking behavior among service members, veterans, and military families coping with invisible wounds. Their campaign features real warriors who prove through example that reaching out is a sign of strength that benefits warriors, their families, their units, and their military community. Through the Real Warriors campaign, Americans can help spread the word. What you can do this week, all the way, you can spread the word about the many psychological health tools and resources available for active duty service members, members of the National Guard and Reserve, veterans, and military families coping with invisible wounds. So for more information about the Real Warriors campaign, like I said, visit realwarriors.net. And now I believe we do have them on the phone. Retired Major Jeff Hall and his wife, Mrs. Sherry Hall. Welcome to Viewpoint Alabama.
Hello.
Major Jeff Hall and his wife, Mrs. Sherry Hall. First of all, thank you all so much for your time. I know that you have just an incredible story and you want to help other families, military families that may have been experiencing some of the same issues and challenges that you have. So do y'all want to, I'll just give you the floor and you can kind of tell me how we got to this point.
Well, it was upon my second deployment, the return from my second deployment, I had transferred out to the Joint Readiness Training Center in Louisiana, where I probably should have known, but I didn't detect the fact that my condition had gotten to the point where everything was manifesting itself in anger, fits of rage, some physical activity at work. I didn't know what was going on with me, and it wasn't until my wife confronted me in the kitchen that my youngest daughter said, "Dad must be going through a midlife crisis." And I don't know why, but that was like lightning hit me. I wasn't able to move. I wasn't able to go to work. I don't know what happened. It was very physical. And Sherry contacted my commander, and I thought my career would be over. But what actually happened was my command took me under their wing and ensured that I got the help that I needed.
This is Viewpoint Alabama. My name is Dino on the phone with retired Major Jeff Hall and his wife, Mrs. Sherry Hall. Major Hall has served this country for over 20 years, two tours of duty in Iraq. And we're talking about the terrific Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net. And of course, Veterans Day was just this week. The month of November is Military Family Appreciation Month. So the Real Warriors campaign is asking Americans to honor the sacrifices of America's warriors and military families by encouraging all service members, veterans, and military families to seek care for psychological health concerns. They have so many tools available. You can visit them at realwarriors.net. As a parent, and this is for both of you guys, how did what you are going through affect you while you were trying to, you know, be a parent?
Well, for me, I let the war get a little heavy, a little heavier than my family, and I'll be strictly honest, it kind of outweighed my family, which is really a part of the condition. I allowed the war to take every bit of me 24 hours a day, and I began to ignore my family, so I didn't try to affect, you know, anything that was going on in my family other than they would make me angry and mm-hmm. I would try to correct it very quickly like a soldier.
For me, I tried to keep a happy home. Even though we were walking around on eggshells, I tried to make sure that, you know, we did everything we were supposed to do. If Dad said do it right now, don't wait 5 minutes, just do it and get it done. But and I tried to also keep us, you know, Jeff didn't want to be socially active, so that was hard for me, and it was hard for our girls. But I just tried to keep positive. I tried to keep everything in the house positive, which is very hard to do when you have that depression that is in your house.
It's Viewpoint Alabama. My name is Dino on the phone with retired Major Jeff Hall and his wife, Mrs. Sherry Hall, talking about the Real Warriors campaign and the month of November for Military Family Appreciation Month. Now, Sherry, this is something that affects not everybody living in your house, but your extended family, too. What kind of support system did you have set up to help you?
I think at the time it was a little hard for the extended family to understand what was going on with us, because, you know, that's just not something that it's not something I thought would ever happen, and it's certainly not something that they expected to happen. I to be honest with you, I isolated myself from the rest of the family because I wanted to try to fix this and deal with it on our own, within our, you know, as much as we could with our, you know, with ourselves. Since then, it's been easier to open up and talk about it once they've seen how we've come out on the other end, and they completely support us sharing our story and helping others, because we kind of, when we came out on this side of it, we kind of made it our mission to help other service members and their families.
Major Hall, can you tell me, like, when you went to your commander and you opened up, you told me you didn't really know what to expect, brought all these resources to you. What sort of resources and tools and programs were available to you and to other servicemen and women?
Well, for me, the resource that they used was actually a care program, an outpatient care program at Walter Reed. So I was actually evacuated to Walter Reed and went through a course there. But and that actually helped me quite a bit. Reaching out and helping other soldiers helps me more today and then once I was able to, you know, kind of keep a balance where I was at. Today, there's all kinds of resources within, and you can see them on the RealWarriors.net website, too. But there's mobile apps for, you know, the younger kids. I don't particularly do technology, but I know the younger guys do.
Yeah.
And so there's mobile apps they can do. There's the campaign website I already given you. The PSAs, the profiles that are on there, was probably the biggest ticket item for us both ways. It helped me, and it helped a lot of the soldiers that I was not in contact with, but became in contact with throughout the entire world. Our PSA was aired in 177 countries, and I started getting emails from all kinds of people when it aired, stating, you know, sir, I didn't know this was going on with you, you know, and we're standing with you, and I've been feeling this way also. So the PSAs were a big ticket item to get people to open up in conversation, and I was able to help them get to places if they needed care by just talking to them.
And that's one thing I really hope that y'all, having y'all on the phone and airing this throughout the state of Alabama on the radio, and just such a focus in our country right now on veterans and keeping them top of mind, is that you never know who's listening. You never know, like you said, like somebody could be going through the exact same thing that you are and not knowing what's available and not really understanding, like, where do I go from here? Is it okay? Is it allowed? And so I just want to thank you guys not only for your time and your service, Major Hall, but the opportunity to come on and, you know, talk about a little bit of an uncomfortable subject. I mean, PTSD, depression, suicide, especially, you know, when you have a family, and seeking care for psychological health concerns. I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. I just appreciate both of you coming on and telling your story, and the Real Warriors campaign, which exists to encourage service members, veterans, and families with psychological health concerns, and to reach out for care like the Halls did during Military Family Appreciation Month. And you can learn more and get the app and all the resources and tools that the Halls were talking about, realwarriors.net.
Yeah, no problem. It's very therapeutic for both of us.
As we're getting ready to close, Viewpoint Alabama, Major Jeff Hall and his wife, Ms. Sherry Hall, anything else that you want to mention?
Just the website address is realwarriors.net. And, you know, they can speak to people confidentially through that website. So And that's, you know, that's a big deal for some people.
Definitely. Well, thank you both again, Major Jeff Paul and his wife, Miss Sherry Hall, for the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for having us.
You're listening to Viewpoint Alabama, a public affairs program from the Alabama Radio Network.
I'm Jim Faraday. Welcome to Viewpoint Alabama. Our guest today, Kelly Garner. Now, if that name sounds familiar, there's a good reason. In January of 2014, when central Alabama was hit by a surprise winter storm, Snowmageddon, Kelly nearly lost his life while helping others. And he has written a book about this experience called The Night That Changed Our Lives. The devil pushed me in a pit, but God pulled me out. We've had Kelly on the show before to talk about that night, and we've invited him back to discuss the book. Kelly, welcome back to Viewpoint Alabama.
Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
First, let's go back, if we could, to January 28th, 2014. The snow was falling. The ice covered the streets. The winter storm paralyzed much of our state. And you were out helping stranded drivers.
Well, I was out with many other individuals, and I have to really catch myself a few times and not take credit for all the things that took place that day, because there's hundreds of volunteers all through the city. And then I also, at the same time, after all this episode took place, I had to really wrap my arms around the idea that, you know, God has a purpose for all of us in our lives. And that was the moment he had for me, was that particular day. And it was because of my disease state with diabetes and being in a hyperglycemic episode that I had that night is when I went off the cliff. And then all the recovery and all the accolades, everything thrown my way, and really had to humble me. And also, that's the time where I had to understand that God does have that purpose and that place for all of us.
Let's go back to that day in 2014. I know you were planning on having a medical procedure.
You know, I was in a fasting mode because I was to have hand surgery that morning, and I did not get to have that surgery because of the snow and ice. And so here we are at the end of the day, you know, one car, 1 mile, 1 hour after the other, and I am in a severe hypoglycemic state, and 22 hours later, I'm, you know, needing some food, and that's when all chaos broke out for me. And unfortunately, no one was around to see me take that fall, that plunge, and it was just me by my lonesome self. And then next thing you know, God's wrapping his arms around me, and the angels were protecting me at the bottom of that ravine that I fell in.
Let's focus on that for a moment. At the time, you were helping stranded drivers along Highway 31 in Vestavia. Cars were stuck all over the place because of the snow and ice.
Well, it turned out to be almost Armageddon-like. I mean, there's a lot of descriptions of what it all did look like, and we've experienced that here in the city before, in the South in particular. And that day was just another one of those crazy, unbelievable, unforgettable day for many of us. And obviously it turned out to be a little bit traumatic for myself, and it's a day that we'll never forget.
Right. So there you are, you know, helping the drivers, and I think at one point you were on the phone to family before the night took a dramatic turn.
Well, at that time, my cell phone was not very good with battery life. I needed a new battery before that night took place, and of all nights not to have a good battery was this night. And my son recognized I had a weird voice, and he knew that sound from me before, from other episodes I've had before. So that's when he asked, Dad, where are you? And I explained to him that I'm in the median on Highway 31, and at that point I can go left on one side of the sidewalk or right to go back into the neighborhood, back to my house. And by the time I decided to make that venture back to the house, you know, I was in a drunken stupor already with the state that I was in. And by that time, he had no idea where I could have been. You know, they looked all over the place all night long.
And we should mention, once again, that stupor brought on by the diabetic condition.
That's right. Obviously, the idea about fasting and diabetes does not go hand in hand, not a very good combination. And I know that firsthand, how that can play out. And I've been in that situation before, unfortunately, and that particular night was not the good time to be in that condition I was in.
So you decide to walk back to the house, which is a fair distance away from where you were helping the drivers?
Well, it's about just over a little bit over a mile, but obviously with the snow and ice and slippery slopes we all have, and Vestavia being the name Hills in it for a reason, and we you don't get around too easily in Vestavia without having to climb something or going down something one way or the other. You got to go up or come down. And it was not that easy after all. And obviously, I did find that out that night.
On a sunny day, that would be a pleasant walk. But on this night, it was very different.
It sure was. It was just a disaster. And I've spoken to lots of people who said, wow, we were right there by you. And we, when they ultimately found out where I was found in, and you know, they just, some people just beat themselves up over the idea that wow, we walked right past that area by the library, and you know, we had no idea, and no one did. I mean, there was not obviously there was not a evidence that I'd slipped. No message of any kind that where I was or where I could have taken off from.
Do you have any final memory before you went down into the ravine?
I still don't to this day. I don't recall anything at all, not even a half of a second of any of the night, even the night in the ravine itself. And, you know, nor did I, you know, did I even wake up to try to extract myself or anything like that. So nothing comes back to mind at all.
And we should mention that there was an all points bulletin issued for Kelly. We featured it on the radio. It was on television. It was all over the place. Everybody was out looking for Kelly. And as Kelly mentioned, everyone was unaware that you were down in this 40-foot ravine just off the highway and on one of the coldest nights of the year.
Yeah, I've heard from a lot of individuals who, after I came out of the recovery and rehab and ultimately hear from them by phone or text or Facebook, what have you, that man, we were in the car that night, and we were stuck, and next thing you know, we're hearing your name hour after hour, and you know, all the other individuals who were going through situations that night, and here Jim was announcing everything, trying to get some attention to those who needed some help, and I happened to be one of those individuals that night.
So you went through a dark, cold night. Of course, the ability to search was limited at that point because of darkness. At first light, the search parties fanned out.
My neighbors got in touch with my family, my wife, and to find out, hey, was that really Kelly we saw on the news? And they had already spent the night doing their own search, looking through the neighborhood, going to the warming stations in Vestavia and up and down 31 and into the neighborhood. And they called my wife and said, hey, is that really Kelly we just saw on Fox 6? And she said, yes, it is. And that's when the Bendall family, the Schaffners, and many others in the neighborhood got together and formed a party and scoured out through the neighborhood and fanned out through Boulder Canyon and up 31. And that's when Mike Schaffner did the – I credit him for being a hunter because no one else would be able to spot me the way he did. Obviously, he had that eye for the prey, if you will, and I happened to be that prey that morning, and he can see, you know, there I was in with snow covered, ice covered, and he saw a pair of boots and a pair of blue jeans sticking up, and Mike Schaffner's one who I credit for the find.
So he calls out to the others, and then the rescue begins.
That's everything I was able to get from the communications that was given to me from Vestavia Hills emergency personnel. They gave me all the 911 calls and the tapes and all the transmissions that took place through the night and that morning. And the one in particular was the 911 call from Mike, who they were too far away to get anyone on the radio, and the police department were around. But, you know, obviously Mike knew it would be quicker to get on his own phone and get in touch and get someone there as quick as he could. And that's what Mike did.
Must have been interesting to go back and listen to those transmissions, since you were the one they were talking about.
It was pretty eerie feeling getting to hear all that and hear my name broadcast out on the dispatch calls and ultimately hear Mike's 911 call and then hear the rescue squad alarms going off and, you know, go rescue this guy. He's the guy that was has been missing. That was the guy that everyone in Vestavia was looking for. And just to hear all that was a weird feeling, no doubt.
Man, it was off to the hospital.
Well, I went to, first I had to go to St. I was sent to St. Vincent's, and St. Vincent's determined that I needed to be in trauma one, level one trauma area. And that at the time, obviously, is for us here in the state is UAB, which I understand is the only level one trauma center in the state. And that's where I was sent, which I took that ride from St. Vincent's to UAB, where I spent 23 days.
At what point did your memory pick back up?
Jim, I didn't. The fall itself took place on Tuesday. The rescue was on Wednesday. And my first recollection of anything that took place in the hospital was probably Saturday night after I'd already had surgery on my back to repair my back. And that was about the first remembrance I had of anything in the hospital. Obviously, from that day going forward, it got progressively better, and things were a little bit on the stable side for me. But they had me in serious condition for several days until I was able to get stable.
I remember there were vertebrae issues.
Yeah, I shattered my vertebrae, and they had to repair my vertebrae with two titanium rods and screws. And the surgical team calls my back the Eiffel Tower because of the metal that's in my back. They have a little fun with that, and they said, oh, boy, you got a lot of metal. We're going to call it the Eiffel Tower.
They were amazed at how close you came to potentially being paralyzed.
Well, they were prepared to tell my family that I was going to be paraplegic, and once they went in, they realized that I was within a hair of severing my spinal cord, and it was by the grace of God that that did not happen. Obviously, I would, you know, it would be a different situation today if I were pulling up here today to talk to you in a wheelchair, and I would have to make the best of my life from that day going forward. But I was just blessed and fortunate that that did not happen, and I would have to make the best of it if it did.
So the recovery at UAB followed by rehab?
First, it started at Spain, from UAB over to Spain rehab, and right. And then from there to Lakeshore.
You're listening to Viewpoint Alabama. I'm Jim Faraday. Our guest is Kelly Garner. He is the author of The Night That Changed Our Lives. The devil pushed me in a pit, but God pulled me out. Tell us a little bit about how you came to write this book.
Well, there were a number of things that people had sent me messages about, and one of those was, one of the three is, we will see a book written from you one day about everything that's happened, because it's obviously got to be a book. We got to read everything that happened. And the other item that someone mentioned to me was, we're going to see you run a marathon one day. And I can say I accomplished the book idea, but not the marathon. I hope to finish. I did a half, 364 days after being discharged from the hospital. My goal and hopes and desires is to get to run the full marathon in February 16. We'll see if I can make that happen. I'm not sure if I'll get there, but we'll see. I just had to, you know, just had people tell me they really saw some wonderful things happen. They wanted to see it and read about it and hear everything that took place. And I sat down at the beach that summer after the accident and just had a simple little three-ring binder notebook and had a pen and paper and started writing some notes, and hadn't at that time had not typed anything out on the computer at all. So then by the time I got out on the computer and realized that, you know, this is not too bad. I think I need to do this book, and I did it and get it out.
The book touches on how this near-death experience affected your faith.
It did, and I was involved in a car accident 11 years earlier where they pretty much thought I was dead, and I kind of just brushed myself off, went about my business, recovered, rehabbed for 3 months with that, and felt like, no big deal. And then this happened, and this is where I believe that, and all the faith that I do have, I really believe that God was sending me a message, that he did tap me on the shoulder and say, you know, I'm giving you another chance here. I've been called a person with nine lives because I've gone through a lot of things before, and this might have been my last moment that God was going to provide for me and be that disciple that he really asked me to be and that I know I need to be.
Was it difficult reliving some of these memories as you wrote the book?
I don't think it was. I think it was pretty good therapy for me, getting to put it on paper and just feel and write how I was feeling and tell the world how God has blessed me and my family and share those moments that did take place. Not everybody gets to read social media, you know, not everybody gets newspaper. So people who get to find the book and understand from this guy that they never even heard of before, they're getting to see the book and see some of the book was there and had been posted before through social media, but here it was compiled into, you know, chronicled everything that took place, not only that night and the recovery and the messages I've received from individuals all over the world, but, you know, just going back in my own diabetes life and talking about the accidents I've been in the past.
I know you received a lot of support from people near and far.
I've got get well cards from 50 all 50 states and 5 different countries, and this past week I shipped out my book to the 18th state that has got a copy of my book, who has requested the book rather, and that's been a true blessing for me as well.
How did all of this affect your family?
Well, you know, I put my family through a lot of things in my time, and not only with my kids now, but with my wife and all the bad things that has taken place. And, you know, the idea that here they were taking really good care of me and babying me, if you will, and making, you know, doing a lot of things that I couldn't do myself. You know, they were there for me, tooth and nail. They were there through all thick and thin, and they kind of propped me up and helped me out along that way through this journey I've been on.
And how about the response to the book? What kind of response are you getting?
It's been pretty well received. I really have gotten some good responses from a lot of individuals and a lot of people that were amazed, and I've got messages from people that were read the book maybe twice, maybe 3 times, and each of the 3 times, 2 or 3 times they read it, they were in tears, and you know, it's been a really fascinating thing because I never thought I'd be called an author before. This was new to me, and I'm not used to writing my name in a book as an author. I've been used to writing checks for paying bills, and here I am writing my name to a book, and that was kind of different for me as well.
So how does your family feel about being related to an author?
Well, they know that I'm not a big book reader in the first place, and that was probably the most fun thing to get to see, you know, Dad with his name on the book and get a kick out of that, knowing that, you know, he's got the author name next to his name, and that's been fascinating for them as well.
What is the message you want people to come away with after reading this book?
Well, I'd love for them to see that, you know, that you can persevere in a lot of bad things. You know, God puts a lot of things in our lives for different reasons, and you may not be in the best things that you had to go through. You know, God puts us through a lot of things in our lives to make us stronger and have to grow from those experiences, and you got to be ready to take that challenge on. If you're not, you're going to be miserable, and that's not a good thing to be going through in your life. I want people to see the perseverance that you can have and the idea that you can pick yourself up and make yourself better and stronger. And I just felt like that the things that I went through and people were seeing wonderful things take place, that thrilled my heart to see them experience what someone can go through.
Well, of course, it is a very inspirational story, to put it mildly. And the book is called The Night That Changed Our Lives. The Devil Pushed Me in a Pit, But God Pulled Me Out. Kelly, how can folks get a copy of the book?
Well, the book is available through lots of places. It's available through WesboPress.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, BooksAMillion.com. It's available also through, I have a website, a blog site. It's the same title of the book, The Night That Changed Our Lives.com. It's through a lot of the multiple different retail shops in the city. If I leave somebody out, I'm going to be in trouble, Jim. So I may have to think about that one again and see if I missed anybody.
Lots of ways to get the book, and we certainly encourage folks to take a look at it. I can't think of a better stocking stuffer than your story. So once again, our guest has been Kelly Garner. He was the Snow Angel of Central Alabama, and he has written this book about this incredible experience called The Night That Changed Our Lives. The Devil Pushed Me in a Pit, But God Pulled Me Out. Kelly Garner, always a pleasure to have you here on Viewpoint Alabama.
Always enjoy being with you, Jim. Thank you.
You've been listening to Viewpoint Alabama, a public affairs program from the Alabama Radio Network. The opinions expressed on Viewpoint Alabama are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of this station. If you have any comments or questions about the program, please send an email to viewpointalabama@arnnet.com. You can also send a letter to the Alabama Radio Network, 600 Beacon Parkway West, Suite 400, Birmingham, Alabama, 35209. Thanks for listening, and please tune in next week for another Viewpoint Alabama from the Alabama Radio Network.